Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Right, good morning. It's another day for a podcast. Christ, it's just such a hassle having all these cables and stuff. I'm just walking around the campus in Galway in Ireland. It's the nearest I ever get to going to university is walking around campuses. And I'm trying to get these levels right on this on the recording. I've got so many cables and things trying to fiddle with auto this and not auto that. It reminds me of a friend of mine who always said he was going to start alpine climbing and winter climbing when he was older. When he was an old man, he thought it was all going to be really easy. And eventually, we ended up going to the Alps together in the winter time. And I think we were going to try to climb the Rolling Stones on the Grand Jurass. And we set off, went up to the hut on the way. What's it called? Is it the Shore Hut? I can't remember anymore. Anyway, there's that hut. Pretty miserable hut, really. Lots of interesting stories about that hut, where people have got sort of stuck in there in the winter because the doors used to open outwards. So if there was lots of snow, you couldn't get out. And it actually happened to me once. I seem to spend a lot of time in that hut without ever actually really climbing anything. I once got stuck in that hut for about a week. I think it snowed, like, it's just snowed constantly for a week, and we had to make our own snowshoes to try and get back to the valley. And it took us like 2 days to get back to the valley, and it was probably the nearest I ever got to being killed in an avalanche. And anyway, that's a story for a bivouac. Anyway, but back to my friend Paul. Anyway, eventually we got to this hut, and there was like a soloist who was going to go off and try and solo the Colton McIntyre, and he was like a Spanish guy. He just sat there like all night long, like looking at a candle, like he was going to die in the morning. So it really sort of lowered the tone of the evening. And then I think in the morning he probably just like buggered off, went back and, you know, got a girlfriend or something. And And anyway, I set off with Paul. I think we might have had some skis or something, or some snowshoes. Anyway, we started, you know, got up at like 2 a.m, then started like heading over towards the Grand Jurass. It was like in the winter time, and I think it pretty far. He just really hated all the slings and all the ropes and all the junk you have to have when you're like winter climbing, like all the you're tying in, you're like tying in short and stuff, and the rope, you know, and the slings are all tangled up, and he just hated it, and he was just like, fuck this, I'm not doing this. And so it's the little things, isn't it? It's not like how difficult the climbing is, it's just all the fannying on around it. I think getting up really early in the morning is not good as well. Like if you spent like years of your life in a Rapalese where you just roll out of the tent at 9 o'clock and have a cup of tea and then just start climbing the crags right there, why on earth would you want to go alpine climbing? I have no idea. God, the idea of getting up early, oh God, that's the worst thing about it. Oh God. I've been a bit of a downer for some reason. I think I've been ill. I've been ill for about 3 weeks of this stupid cold. I don't know if I've been getting like extra servings of illness. So I've just been in. I'm about to go back to the Middle East, to my unidentified country where I live in the Middle East, which sounds interesting at the moment. Sounds like you might have a little war going on soon. Anyway, it's never boring. I've got a friend in Kenya, in Nairobi, called Fish. I don't know what his real name is, but it's, anyway, I think even his email address says Fish, so Fish. And we said to him, like, why would you not want to live in Europe? You know, Europe, it's like it's a nice place to live. And he was like, no, it's too boring. And I think the Middle East is a bit like that. It's probably the safest place you'll ever go. Like, the safest place I've ever been in my life, the Middle East. But at the same time, it's a bit like El Capitan. In that, if you compare like El Capitan to the Troll Wall, like the Troll Wall, like, there's like rock falling down the entire time. Like, rock the size of a house, rock the size of a brick, just like constantly falling down. It's like fucking death on a stick. Where El Cap, like, very rarely anything falls down, but if it does, it's like the size of a school or something. So the chance of being killed there are pretty minimal, but when they do happen, they'll probably wipe out, you know, wipe out the whole of the Yosemite Valley or something. So the Middle East is like that. It's actually very, very safe, much safer than England, Ireland, anywhere, you know, anywhere in Europe. Really, really safe. You can just leave your computer on the table in the cafe outside, your wallet, all your stuff, just go wandering around, you come back. The thievery is punishable by death and having parts of your body chopped off, and so that's, you know, that's probably one reason why. So what was my point? Oh yeah, so I've been ill for about 3 weeks, and I think when you feel ill, like, everything's... You have no... What was it? Health. Your health is your wealth, isn't it? So... But yesterday was quite nice. Someone said how Vanessa, my wife, she seemed to be one of these... one of the few sort of women at the moment who are actively going out and doing sort of alpine-y, sort of wintery, sort of big wally stuff. There's lots of really good women doing, you know, really hard rock climbing and, you know, sort of like high altitude mountaineering and things. But she seemed to be like one of the few doing, you know. I was thinking the last year we went on Denali in the winter time, and she got the highest of a woman. I don't really like all that kind of stuff, all that woman, men, trans stuff. I don't really think like that, but anyway, but she just happened to be a woman and got very high on Denali. in the winter time, and you know, and I think in the same year she climbed A4 on El Cap and tried all sorts of weird stuff. Anyway, but anyway, it's kind of funny because I don't think she like just decided she doesn't like all that kind of stuff. She doesn't like getting up early in the morning, and she doesn't like aid climbing anymore. She said like it's just kind of cheating, which it is. She wants to, she'd only go on El Cap. I'm going through a tunnel now, so I was like, I've got some interesting sound effect going on. So she, yeah, she's not really into it anymore. She's thinking of having a baby. I guess I'll have to be involved in some capacity. And maybe that's always the thing about women when they get into alpine climbing and everything else. It's like, you know, most women tend to want to have kids, and no matter how you could try and frame it in some different way, like it's other people's fault, but I've met like two friends of mine recently who've just had children, two women who were pretty hardcore individuals, and both of them have just said they're a psych for doing anything dangerous, has completely been destroyed by having this child. So maybe Vanessa's the same. Who knows? I don't know. I'm sure there'll be many podcasts of stuff to talk about if if we have a baby. So someone said, because I'm 48, so the idea of having another baby, like bloody hell, like my kids are only just grown up. So my daughter's 21, my son's 18, I think, keeps changing, and. So it's like coming out of prison after 21 years, and then someone's saying, sorry, we've made a mistake, you have to go back in again. So, although saying that, my kids and that book, Higher Education, I wrote, are the three of the things I'm most proud of in my life. So, although saying that, I shouldn't really be proud of them. They're probably sold down to them. It's nothing to do with me. Although the book is, I did have to write it also. But anyway, but someone said, what do you think about having more kids? And I've kind of taken this... I've taken the position that having children is a bit like death. As in, you don't really get to choose. It's just something you have to go with, really. Maybe that comes from living in Ireland. But so, yeah, so what... What's this podcast about? God, I've been talking too long already. So this podcast, it's that time of year, isn't it, where everyone starts just going on about all sorts of shite about like, oh, do this for the new year, New Year's resolutions. And then you get all the people who are like, oh, I don't believe in New Year's resolutions. I just do them straight away, all that kind of stuff. And I've noticed this, the two things I've seen a lot on the television like over New Year's is one is like live your best life, just think about that, live your best life. I might get that tattooed somewhere, and do what you do. Like, I wonder who thinks of all this stuff. It's like a bit like, do what you do, what does it even mean? It sounds like sort of something about wanking or something, or do yourself, cop on, I don't know. Anyway, so I thought, because because I'm going for like a little walk along the river, I'd maybe give some alternative New Year messages, more than one, to everybody out there. I did scribble down about 10 things on a piece of paper, but I've lost it, so it'll have to be a bit freeform. I'm not sure they're actually about climbing related, but don't worry. My daughter has advised me to do some mini-sodes, which are just small episodes. She's like, she's not a millennial. She's born in 98. I think she's not a millennial, but she's kind of is going that way. She actually doesn't like millennials. She's like, oh God, Dad, millennials. Anyway, she was born before September the 11th, so technically I don't really see her as being a millennial. Anyway, she advised me I need to do some mini swords. So what I'm going to do starting next week, I think every Wednesday or Tuesday, or whenever I get around to it, I'm just going to, I think I might start doing like just talking individually about top tips. And I did like, I think I did about 50 top tips on my Instagram account, Psychovertical. I might actually do, because when you do things on Instagram, you're very limited. You've only got like 300 words or something, or more, 1,000 words, 1,000 characters. So you're very limited, Tom. So every Wednesday, I'm going to do that. I'm totally going for it. I'm just going to, really go for it. Podcasting is the way forward. Podcasting is so much easier than writing. Christ almighty. No one reads anymore. That's the problem. Anyway, so every Wednesday, I'm going to try and do that. I quite like tips. So when I was in Poland the other week, someone was asking me what's my favourite tip, which is a good question. And I said, if you have like your water in an Nalgene bottle, it's always worth having an insulated cover for your Nalgene bottle. I think an Nalgene bottle is still probably the best receptacle for drink. There's some of these like metal bottles actually quite good. I can't remember any of the names of them. Hot bottles or whatever they call them. Anyway, they're actually quite good. But like I used one of those inside insulated cover on Denali, and it went down to minus 40, 50, whatever, some kind of very cold temperature. And they actually kept the stuff unfrozen. Anyway, but an algae bottle and a cover, the best covers you can buy would be Aiguille Alpine, which is a British company. They basically make a copy or a homage to the old Outdoor Research insulated covers, which were really, really good. And the new Outdoor Research ones are not very good. I don't find them very good. I find them really hard to get the bottles in and out of. I don't find them very insulating, and I just don't think they're very good. And 40 Below, they make a quite a good one, like a neoprene one. It's very simple. But anyway, those two, Aiguille, the other one. An insulated cover is quite good, because not only does it keep the stuff on the inside from freezing as quickly, it will still freeze, but it also stops it getting really hot if it's in hot weather. And it's just a good thing, gadget to have. You can clip it onto you can Velcro it onto the base of your shoulder straps or onto your harness or whatever. So you can have your water right there, which is good if you want to stay hydrated. Like, it's no good. The number of trips you go with people and they just have this like block of ice stuck inside their rucksack somewhere, carrying like a kilo of ice, it's kind of pointless. So Nalgene bottle, my tip was that if you put your Nalgene bottle in upside down into the cover, ice always forms on the top of water first. So it means if it is super cold, the ice is on the bottom of your bottle, not on the top where the lid is. I think the translator probably didn't really understand what I was talking about, because no one seemed to get what I was saying. So anyway, so that's a little tip. That's the kind of hot tips you're going to get if you listen on a Wednesday at some time. But today, I'm going to do some podcasts about the art of not suffering. But I need to reread, because I'd like to do it all just off the top of my head rather than actually giving you any facts. There are some facts that's probably worth me double checking, like your internal temperature and your external temperature and a few things like that. What I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about the skin, and then I'm going to do about your body works in the cold. How there's no such thing as cold, and you know, unless it's absolute zero, which is an absence of heat. Maybe, who knows? Yeah, that's why I need to read up on it. And yeah, do a few podcasts about how not to die, or how to stay comfortable in tough places. But anyway, but today I just thought I'd like bang something out without really having to think about it. So I was gonna talk about the subject of happiness, because maybe that's probably one reason why we all go climbing, is to be happy. And I've done a podcast about not dying. I'll probably cover that subject again. But after not dying, being happy is a good one to think about. So happiness is a good beginning of the year kind of thing, because you can listen to me waffle on, and you might sort of take something on board, and you might do it for like 3 days, and then just like forget about it. So then I'll just tell you again next year. So I thought I'd cover the low-hanging fruit of happiness to begin with. So I think I get a lot. I seem to get quite a lot of people contacting me. I wrote an article called something to do with acid in your veins. Anyway, I've written a few things about like mental health. I don't like the term mental health anymore. I don't like the term dyslexia either. I call it brain sickness. It kind of seems more like human, a more human scale kind of thing, less sort of bureaucratic. So if you go to hospital and say I'm suffering from brain sickness, I don't know. I think it's maybe a bit Victorian. I quite like that Victorian kind of thing. But anyway, so I get quite a lot of people emailing me about stuff like that for some reason. I'm no way qualified to respond, but I generally like say something or other. Like someone sent me a message. If he's listening to this, I do apologise for this story, but he sent me a message about someone committing suicide who he knew. And I seem to have had kind of a strange, close relationship with suicide all my life. I don't know why. I think maybe it's something that stalks you, suicide. Anyway, I seem to have known a strangely large number of people who've killed themselves. So it's kind of, I find it an interesting topic. Somebody pulled me up on it, someone who was a qualified brain doctor, that I'd used the word, I'd said that suicide was a privilege, was a sign of privilege or something. Told me that lots of people committed suicide on the Eastern Front in the Second World War. Not sure that was proving either of us was right, but... anyway, so people start writing me about things like that sometimes. Anyway, and this person wrote to me about his someone committing suicide. I wrote something back, but then I realised actually his son had committed suicide. And, I think what I said had some, you know, I think it was still the same if it was your son or someone you knew. That sounds a bit depressing, this podcast already. Anyway, that thing about suicide, it's pretty depressing. Or not, who knows? I've lost my train of thought now. I should write more things down. So the main thing for happiness, I think, is maybe to really think about it. Think about it a little bit more deeply than that. Like what is happiness? So I'd say being a believer in stoicism and all that good stuff, I'd say that happiness is an absence of misery, and really happiness isn't really anything at all. I could probably just completely just get rid of the whole idea of happiness. It's something you have on a card that you buy for someone because you have to, and give to them, and many happy returns and all that kind of stuff. So really, maybe what you want is between the spectrum, you want to lie between the spectrum of like joy and misery, maybe. I don't think halfway to misery is could be called happiness, but it's definitely, don't know, not being miserable is the aim. So I think language is really important, how we talk about these things, how we think about these things. I think often we're kind of trapped in the words we use a little bit. So I used to have this girlfriend who was training to be an Olympian, and she used to have these really hard turbo sessions on a bike, like really hard, like you'd be kind of being sick afterwards, and you know, absolutely dreaded doing these sessions. And then she called them the killer sessions, and they really were, you know, kind of really, really grim. Anyway, so one day I said, why don't you call them like gold sessions instead? And she did, and it made a huge difference, made it a lot easier. So we're human beings, actually, we're pretty simple things. Just move the words around, and that's what advertising is all about. So maybe focus on you know, like the stoical view is that you're laying in a puddle. You have no house, you have no food, you have no money, you have no family. You're laying in this puddle with this piss-stained blanket, you know, in the elements. But at least you've got a blanket, you know. So when you're stressing, you've only got an iPhone 10, or you know, that's not a cause, you know, to be down. So stoic. So imagining less is maybe is a good thing to do. You always have options downwards. You know, things can always be worse, and there's always someone worse than you. I once went to a spinal unit, and there was someone we knew who had had a broken their spine, and they were like quadriplegic, so that means, you know, basically pretty grim. But in the bed next to it was a girl who'd been on a go-kart, and her scarf had gone into the wheels, and it had broken her neck, and she was like not quadriplegic, what's it called? Anyway, she was like totally, you know, couldn't do anything at all. Could just like move her eyes. So there's always someone worse than you. God, this is getting really depressing. It's like New Year's Day. Anyway. So it's Ireland, I think. Ireland brings you down. It's a bit, everyone's obsessed with and Galway's so depressing. It's always raining. It's also really nice, but like in Galway, when people say the weather's good, they generally mean like right now, like it's going to be raining in 10 minutes time. So that was number one, is try and readjust what your ideas of happiness are. And if you have joy the whole time, that's not good either. You know, just try and ration out the joy, ration it so you don't have too much of it, because a luxury becomes a necessity. So, and avoid the misery. I think a big thing I've thought about recently is is what a big effect junk has on us. Both like junk we put in our minds and sort of junk we put in our bodies. I've got this idea that poor people don't eat shit food, but shit food makes people poor. That's probably hanging around in Hull for a while, which is probably one of the poorest places you're gonna see in Europe. Made me think about that. But yeah, like I went through this. I probably watched too much Joe Rogan or something. But I remember when I was a kid, when I was probably about 10, my dad would always tell me that sugar was white poison, and I just ignored him. Because my dad was one of his like physical training instructors in the Air Force, like basically a sadist, and his job was to make like young men like swim in the sea at like 5 a.m. in the middle of winter, and you know, beast people all the time. So I just thought he was being a sadist and having a downer on sugar. But I started doing some sort of this intermediate fasting, because I'm very wary of cults for some reason. Cults and everything. But I don't know, it seemed to fit in with a lot of few, like, you know, stoical things. Like, anyway, it seemed like an interesting idea. So I started doing a bit of intermediate fasting. In fact, I would do intermediate fasting all week long. So I would only start eating at like 2 o'clock something. But not eat a lot. I just have like a cup of coffee, some milk in it at about 2 o'clock, and then I'd have my tea, and then that would be it. And I mainly did it to help with my focus, because I'm not very good at focusing. Like, as you probably can tell by these podcasts, I'm a little bit, my brain is not very focused. So like, I'm trying to finish this book, which is, you know, like, just why do I take these things on? Like, I don't know why. If you can't, it's like, why did I start becoming a writer when I can't write? And all these, it just doesn't make any sense, you know. But taking on this bloody finishing this book project, where I'm probably 70% through, having done all the illustrations, I've done all the writing, and now I have to do the design. You know, you just have to really, really like focus on it. Like, I don't really make any having income apart from writing at the moment. So it's a bit like soloing a big wall, in that if you're sailing around the world in a yacht and you're not doing anything, you're still sailing around the world in the yacht. You could sit there with your gin and tonic, but the wind's still in your sails. But when you're soloing a big wall, if you're not actually doing anything, you're not going anywhere. If you're not hauling or leading or cleaning, you're not going anywhere. So writing's the same. When the whole project is yours, you know, if you're not pumping out words, doing pictures, you know, you're not going anywhere. So anyway, I started intermediate fasting, and I found it really, really good, and it probably fits in with a lot of ideas I think about a lot of kids. I've kind of, schools I've been to with the bad kids, the bad kids in them, is they basically just eat shit all the time. Crisps, cakes, bottles of Coke. It's just brain poison. But I don't want to be one of these people who are like cultish about these kind of things. Like, I think the sort of 80-20 rule stands for just about everything in life. So I think you can 20% of the time you can eat shit and it doesn't matter. But if you're only eating like good stuff, you know, only good stuff like 20% of the time, then it doesn't matter. So I really tried to get rid of as much sugar and sort of carbs out of my diet, and it worked really well. And There's a lot of people, like, it's kind of, it's like telling people to suck eggs. It's like, don't eat shit and you won't feel shit. But I know myself, like, it's very easy to say it, very hard, much harder to do it, because we're, like, totally addicted to sugar. Like, yeah, some people aren't, but most of us are. We're, like, absolute fucking drug addicts. And a really good thing, I think, is if you ever go to a restaurant where there's a lot of people, if you look for the really fat person and look at their eyes, how they look at the food, like, it really makes you really realise what's going on. Like, the sugar has all the power over you. You know, it really does. Like, go and read the 48 Laws of Power. You know, great book, most popular book in prisons. And you need to add in the law of sugar, because, sugar, it's amazingly powerful stuff. And have you ever seen that? I don't know if you've ever seen that film, They Live, the John Carpenter film, where this guy finds this pair of glasses, this homeless guy, and he puts them on, and suddenly you can see, like, loads of people that are aliens around him, and everyone on the television are aliens, and all, they're all kind of brainwashing everybody. But when you try and really cut the sugar out of your diet for about a couple of weeks, like, it's not actually that difficult. That you suddenly realise that everything is just, like, full of sugar or just not good for you. Like, you go into Starbucks and you just look and it's just, like, everywhere is sugar, and everyone's having these drinks with, like, loads of cream and shite in them. And it's like being a science fiction film. But, like all good addictions, you know, just one slip and you're right back there. So being back in England and travelling and back in Ireland, but straight back into it, back into the sugar, feeling fat, feeling unhealthy, feeling demotivated. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to, like, I think maybe, like, people like me, basically probably people in general, we kind of need a very strict regime to try and live under. That's why Islam is popular, and, you know, we like sort of religions which tell us what to do, what to eat, because it gives us a, you know, it's kind of important, really. So I've been basically trying to live on this idea of eating, of not eating anything that's white or could be white, which is a hashtag Tim Ferriss, that's in his book. And another thing is interesting is this idea of avoiding anything with ingredients printed on it, which I kind of do pretty well. Like, my sister's, like, super, super intelligent woman, professional, and she said at one time, like, oh, well, everything you cook, it's all fresh. And I was kind of like, what? Like, how else would you do it? And then I realised that because she's so busy that she eats more processed food, and she gives her kids more processed food, just because it's just kind of easy. And so that's kind of, maybe it's good to focus on what you're doing right, rather than just, like, you know, beat yourself all the things you're doing wrong. But so basically what we live on is I just make one lot of curry. Just got to love that curry at the beginning of the week, and we just make enough for 5 days. Usually have, like, some fish 2 days a week as well, as, like, a separate thing. And then I cook that, and I cook the rice. Yes, it's brown rice, and it could be white, so technically that's, you know, but the 80-20 rule's in force, so I can't allow to eat some rice. And freeze it all up in the freezer, and then there's no, like, escape. Your food's there, it's all done. Which seems to work quite well. So that's so the food thing. Yeah, I reckon if people could control what they ate, they'd, you know, within 2 weeks, they start feeling much better about a lot of things. And it's easy to say that when you've done it, but it's much harder to stick to it. I think we're all sinners, aren't we, really? The other thing, point three of my New Year's stuff, is about 6 months ago, I lost my, left my phone down the side of a couch somewhere in New Zealand. And they said, oh, eventually they got back to us and said, oh, we've left your phone on our couch. And I bought it in Kenya. It was actually a very super cheap phone. I was just like, no, just don't bother. Just keep it. And I've been trying to not have a phone since about 2014, when I kind of realised it's really bad for my attention span, and it was also really bad for being present. And we all know this. So this is like, again, this is like sucking eggs time for everybody, but I'll say it because maybe someone knows it like I did, and this might make them think just an extra little bit, push them over the cliff. But I tried to, so I realised it really affected my relationships with my kids, affected relationships with my wife, Vanessa, and, you know, it just turned, mobile phones just turned you into a complete asshole, basically. And because everybody else is an asshole, it's hard to really see it, even though secretly we do. It's like if everyone was wanking all the time, and you'd be like, well, they're all wanking. Why can't I? So I got like a dumb phone, tried various things. The problem is if you're like me, like you have to be a social media whore like your whole life. It's like being in the mafia, social media mafia. Unless you're really nice to say for 2020, I'm not going to go on social media. But basically my whole income would probably just die. So you have to do it. They pull you back. So I have to kind of do social media. So in the past I'd always say like, oh, I need to get a phone because I have to go on Instagram, or I have to go on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So I'd end up getting another phone. But I managed to stay off it for about six or so months. A few things I noticed was you realise everyone was wanking all the time, and you weren't. Like, you go out for a meal, and, you know, when someone was talking, other people would all just start looking at the phones, and it was like, God, you ignorant fuckers, like, this person's talking, like, listen to what they're saying. And just general being a total cunt, basically, mobile phone cunt. But everybody else is doing it, like I. So it's probably one of these moments with the glasses. You put your glasses on, you realise everyone's fucking drunk on sugar, doped up on sugar, and doped up on data. The two together, it's a bad mix, really. So, but it's not that easy. Like, you know, flying, you need to have your boarding pass on your phone, and with banking, everything's on your phone. Like if you want to buy something, they send you a text message and you haven't got a phone. And it really is, there's not a conspiracy in there to make people, you know, have phones. But that's kind of the way it is. So it is kind of it's very tough. But by not having a phone, it's interesting that this idea that, you know, so I'm not being like some sort of worthy person here, because as soon as like Vanessa bought a Nokia, is it 120, like this super basic phone, wasn't a smartphone, but when she, in her like current job, she had to have a smartphone because there was like a WhatsApp group or something. Again, like, why do you need to have a WhatsApp group where you're getting contacted like 5 in the morning with some some information. Anyway, ban WhatsApp groups, that's what I say. Just print it out, I'll come and tell someone, ring someone up. If it's not worth ringing someone up, then don't bother. So, anyway, so she had to get a smartphone. So, as soon as I get that smartphone in my hand, I am, like, off like a total addict, you know, retweeting, checking my emails 20 times a minute. It's amazing how you just go straight back to it. And even if we are walking along and we're talking about me not having a phone, it makes me want to look at my phone that I don't have. It's a bit like that feeling when you feel like your phone buzzing in your pocket that you got a message, when you haven't got a message and you haven't got a phone and you haven't got a pocket. So yes, I hope I can stay off it, really, because it's just for your happiness levels, your attention span, just all that kind of stuff. If you want to be less miserable, get rid of your phone and just make alternative arrangements. So all my social media stuff that I have to do, I basically do it all on my computer. So I have like Flume, which allows me to do Instagram on my computer, and of course you can do like Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So this is number four, is that I use this thing, the IFTT.com, I think it's called. So I try to only ever use Instagram because I find it a more positive kind of experience generally. Instagram brings you down in some aspects because you feel like you've got a shit life. You know, I have a quite a good life, but it makes me feel like I've got a shit life. So if you've got a shit life, God, you're going to be, really is going to make you realise how shit your life is. Although having known a lot of these people who are on Instagram, who you assume have a great life, they have a really shit life. I'll take it from me, they have like fucked up relationships, fucked up, they're just miserable people, miserable, bitter, twisted, they're just not in a good place. So just think about that. Whenever you see someone who's like high-fiving on some beach in Malibu, they're basically a twat, basically. They're a twat for even putting the picture up there in the first place. Like, I really don't like, I have loads of pictures I could have put on Twitter and on Instagram, hanging out with like 50 prostitutes in Trump Tower, all these pictures, me in my Lamborghini in Dubai driving along, high-fiving the prince. But I don't put those pictures up because why, what happened to people? People used to be more, what's the word? I still got this problem with my word remembering thing. Anyway, people just didn't do that kind of stuff before. Anyway, so I basically use Instagram, and when I post on Instagram, it appears on Twitter and it appears on Facebook and other places, without me actually having to go to Facebook and Twitter, if I can avoid it. And I do try and avoid going anywhere like that, because I am a total addict. So the thing about addicts, they're always addicts. They never get over it. So you need to avoid those kind of places. Because as soon as I go there, as soon as I'm in a car and I get hold of Vanessa's phone, I'm suddenly, sending message, retweeting stuff I shouldn't retweet, and just for the hit of it, just the endorphins of getting a response from somebody. So it's like throwing a stone. Hopefully it's going to hit someone, and they're going to come up and, have a little fight or something. It's all the same. It's all some kind of violence. So using tools on your computer, I find kind of handy. But the other thing that I use is I try to control that. So basically my whole life is about controlling the beast inside me, my beastly self, my animal self that just wants to run amok. So So on a Mac, you can get an app called Self Control, which is very appropriately named, and it's free. You download it, and when you you set up a blacklist of websites you don't want to visit, so online it'd have like The Guardian, BBC, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, various things. If you're addicted to pornography, you want to stick all them in there as well. If you're not addicted to pornography, stick them all in there as well. And so someone said that men either have no pornographic magazines or they have a wardrobe full. And so yeah. So anyway, so once you set off, you set a timer. So I would set my timer basically from getting up in the morning till probably like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And once you start it, you basically cannot go onto any of those websites. Even if you switch your computer off, no matter what you do, they are completely blocked. So, which is really, really amazing. Really, really amazing. Now, Vanessa would be like, why don't you just have some self-control and don't go on them? I'm like, like, it's like being a junkie, having like a big syringe of, you know, of heroin, you know, just like right next to you while you're trying to work. All you can think about is the heroin and not injecting it, which is the same as thinking about injecting it. So I'm sure on Windows you can actually find the same. There's probably another thing, but the main thing is you have to have a system where it blocks it on all browsers and everything else. If you are a junkie, and then the biggest thing if you're a junkie is admitting you're a junkie. Like, if you get angry at people when they say you're a junkie, I'm not a junkie, when that means you're a junkie. So anyway, so it's a good thing is just to try it for a while. Put your phone somewhere you can't have it. Download this software. Stop having sugar. All these kind of things. And see how it goes. And then the next thing I do is, I'm not doing it at the moment on my current computer, but you can actually go into the terminal or into like the system and actually block websites forever. So there's no way you can look at them on your computer unless you have to go through all the hassle of actually going, you know, looking up how to do it again to unblock it. So I generally, the two websites I used to have on that, number one was the BBC website, because I just don't like the BBC website anymore, and The Guardian, the same thing, I just don't like The Guardian anymore, which is funny. I was thinking this morning about how in 2006 I was invited to go on an expedition to Greenland, and in the process of the expedition going along, we got like a letter from David Cameron, who was the Tory party leader, and I was so outraged that we got this letter from him. I almost refused to go on the expedition unless we got a letter from Tony Blair. And at the time, we had this like total moral certainty that this was the correct. The correct thing to do. And now looking back, I just think it's a bit of a twat, really. And so the idea for that younger self, totally morally certain to think that one day you'd be blocking the BBC website, BBC News website. I still like a lot of BBC content, I just don't like the news anymore. It's an interesting fact. But anyway, so I just find that the... Basically, we live in a world full of traps. Media is full of traps, whether they're traps to make you buy stuff, traps that make you feel ugly or worthless, and you can pay someone to rectify that, or traps to make you angry. They're just full of traps. And the more traps you avoid, the further you'll go in life. You won't just be like dragging these fucking traps around every single day, especially in the morning. Like, do never, look at the websites, news websites, in the morning. Save it for, like when I was a kid, I didn't read newspapers, but as I got older, the only newspaper I'd ever read was The Guardian or The Independent. And the only reason I read The Independent was it said The Independent, and I thought it'd be Independent. And I thought it was being a bit alternative. So, but really you only had the news at 9 o'clock, news at 10 o'clock, maybe some news after the kids' TV programmes. You had John Craven's News Round, kids' TV. So news was very, it was a very small part of your day. It was very rare that things were ever live. I remember when the SAS stormed the Iranian embassy in 1984, was it? 1982 and 1981, sometime in the 80s, is that was live on television. That was like, you know, when something was live, it was really big. And then, but I think the 24-hour news is like fucking toxic, absolutely toxic on people. And that would probably be my final point, would be to really, really turn down your exposure to the news, the news media, to all that kind of stuff, to opinions, to everything else. Because as soon as you start turning it down, you know, get your news from podcasts. Like, find people you trust who do podcasts, and you know, see what they're talking about. If things are really important, they'll come to the fore. Again, it's just full of, the news is full of traps, really. It's all biased. It's biased. It's as biased on the BBC as it is on Fox. It's as biased on NPR as it is on sort of talk radio. And I would say that from my experience of travelling around the world and living and talking to rednecks and people on guns and, you know, people who are pro-life and people who are, you know, socialists and ex-communists and everybody else, I'd say that the 80-20 rule is probably in force, in that 20%, nearly everybody is 20% wrong. And I would say that's an understatement. I would say nearly everybody is 50% wrong about everything, including me, including you, and, you know. And some people might be like, that's not true, I'm totally right. That's not true. So I think, so the final thing was, like, when David Bowie died, I remember, like, someone said that one of his aims in life was to find the middle, was to get to the middle, I think. And I think when you start turning down the news and turning down, get rid of your phone, get rid of as much social media as you can, you know, try and avoid commenting on what other people are saying, because no one's reading it, really. It's all violence, basically. Everything is violence of some form or other. Violence and traps. Just avoid getting involved. Just walk away. Is, I think, if you change the way you interact with the rest of the world around you, you will become a much healthier and less miserable person. You'll be less anxious. You'll feel better about yourself. You'll feel better about everybody else. You'll be more forgiving. And yeah, I think it's a very Christian thing, but yeah, be very, like, you tend to see everyone more like who they are. Like, they're just, people make mistakes, people believe strange things. And I think basically your tolerance for intolerance increases, which is pretty important these days. And you're less controlled, and I think you tend to know it as well. So yeah, so there's a few thoughts for you. If you like this podcast, then please subscribe on it, what all those things are. All that social media stuff, iTunes, and that kind of stuff. If you like this podcast, drop me an email, andy@cyclevertical.com. Share it. Just give us some feedback. I could speak at length about how to deprogram yourself and be a happier, less miserable person. But this is supposed to be about climbing, so I shall save that for a later date. But anyway, so check out the next one. Hopefully it'll be about how not to suffer in the mountains, in nature. Anyway, hope you enjoy this podcast, and goodbye.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.